Hey guys, here is the second part of our two-part series of Spring Training 2024. Hope you guys enjoy.
We're going to do our best to get new thinking out there.
There's going to be discussions centered around growth and new thinking.
That's where those great ideas come from, exploring them together.
Nuggets that you can go back and put into your dealership that'll help you make more money.
This is GarageCast.
Chancellor, today we're going to finish it up with rounding out the rest of the departments in there. Sales, F&I, P&A, Pro Shop and Service, staffing, and then we have a big old catch-all drawer of some stuff that we want to talk about. So, yeah, go. Yeah, I see a finger up.
Yeah, it's the correct finger. Digital leads. Like, we hammered that a lot last week, and I got a ton of feedback, and the feedback was, I agree with you. Why don't we spend that kind of time talking about it in 20 clubs? And I'm like, well, I think we do. And what it comes down to, and kind of the awareness that I had, is that the people who want to talk about that and want to be on the cutting edge of growing it right are the ones pushing for talking about it more. And then the people who are like, well, I just delegated out to my sales team, and they're ready to move right past that. Let's get into my composite. Let's stop talking about that. So I think, as a general statement, when we go into this next round of 20 clubs, we need to spend more time and allow for some more conversation around the digital traffic log, because again, 95% of our leads are starting there. Let's give some space for that to happen.
Yeah. The reason we don't talk about it is because you all don't do it.
Yeah. Let's talk about my F&I department.
85 to 90% of it, we asked the question last week. If you can tell me exactly what your process is, if you can tell me exactly what the pay plan is, if you can tell me about the functions, the hours, how you hired them, how you train them in your digital landscape, if you can tell me about your internet sales department, if you can tell me about your BDC, and you can do a cogent argument and a flow chart of what it does, let's talk about it. But for the most part, we're like, hey, let's talk about your digital traffic log. And like, yeah, man, I got to work on that. I got to figure out where those numbers are. That doesn't look right. So yeah. Okay. So I get it. Yeah. Let's talk about my F&I. That's awesome.
Let's jump in where we left off last time. We were talking about, inventory and flooring and you know, flooring cost and taking deals, possibly significantly low margin deals. And it reminds me of what Rick Alcon said in one of our 20 clubs. Rick Alcon, longtime member, RNS Cycles. He's got several locations, and it was great having him in the room at one of our last rounds. He was looking at a big high volume dealer, and the high volume dealer was really just churning out deals at a significantly lowered margin. And the question came from that dealer, which is, what, you don't think I can get back to, you know, 50 or double digit operating GP was the question. You don't think I can get back to double digit operating GP? And Alcon was the first to jump in and very robustly said, there is no way north of 10% operating GP if you're not running north of 15% margins on vehicles, period. And then just, you mic drop, it's dead silence all over the whole entire room, right? And it just, you sit there and you think, look, if you are strategically having to take the lower margin deals to get yourself in a better inventory position, then do it and then come right back to every deal for every dollar. Tony, it goes back to what you said last week. You start at full margin with full freight and setup, and you move from there and go down if you need to. But your staff needs to understand, we are in a situation where we're going to structurally go down on margin as needed to take the deal, to move the inventory, and then we're coming right back up to retail to get ourselves up to that mid-double-digit margin on units, thus hoping to get ourselves north of, well, back into double-digit operating GP. But wanted to thank Rick Alcon for that. It was a great way to kick off that round.
Rick Alcon, Jedi.
Jedi.
Jedi. Takes a long time to become a Jedi. There's a lot of young apprentice Jedi's out. There's a lot of young Skywalkers out there for sure. Future Jedi's.
Alcon. Yeah, but they're all jumping in their seats, right? You got Doug Rudd and Rick Alcon sitting right next to each other at my meeting, just calmly, quietly putting a hand up, and then bam.
Two stupidest dudes in the room just sitting there, short, 1 foot tall, funny looking ears in green, Yodas.
Wow. I'm sure no comments are coming back on that one.
Oh, come on. It's for real. Let's talk about, you know, Sam pushed on this one for years, and we finally put it into all non-marine composites. I think it makes sense, especially with with, you know, kind of what I said last week, which is you got some vehicles that are starting price at $42,000, leaving dealerships at $60,000 with roofs, racks, all this other stuff. So, you know, F&I percent of sales added to all non-marine composites. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, it's an eye opener both ways. And what we're getting at here is for years in power sports, we've since I joined up with Ed in 2000, we were talking about PUS per unit sold. And occasionally we'll get the car guy in there who wants to talk about PVR per vehicle retail. And I'm like, get that filthy language out of our industry, our clean, awesome industry. But we got in the marine space years ago, and all of a sudden we were presented with something a little bit new. Instead of a per unit sold, it was a percentage of sales. Because if you're selling a $100,000 boat or $1 million yacht, your per unit sold number in F&I carries far less weight as far as understanding how, you know, the potential of the store. If I'm a dealer and all I sell is small dollar fishing boats, as in sub 100 grand, which is hilarious to me that that's a small dollar fishing boat. And then, you know, I got a dealership on the ocean in, on the East Coast of Florida, and the lowest dollar amount they're selling is a $600,000 fishing boat. That per unit sold number is not very relevant. So we went with a percentage of sales in the F&I department. And now we've rolled out, we need to reciprocate that because the marine composites have always had a PUS and a percentage of sales in there. But now for them to be able to see the per unit sold or the percentage of sales from the metric dealers and the motorcycle dealers, and they see that number is 50, 60% more as a percentage than what they're doing, is very eye-opening as to the deficiencies in the F&I department in marine. And then for the power sport guys to start looking at their numbers, the percentage of sales, it's just a different way of ranking them to what's the potential in that department. So we're running per unit sold and percentage of sales on F&I in all industries that we play.
Yeah, I like that. I think the dealers will enjoy that as well. Let's move on to something that I know this is your state of the industry. This is something that I've been harping on this for 23 years. So it's like,
you're tired.
But it comes full circle, and that is priority maintenance industry-wide. Now, I have my theory it's not a theory. This is just pure numbers, man, on what happened. Why are more people not selling it? Why are you not doing better with it? I can have an F&I manager that is crushing in, and they're in green, which means they're benchmarking. They're hitting the benchmark. I can have them in all green in every category except for priority maintenance. And here's my theory is the F&I manager's pay plan or the F&I manager themselves, they're lazy. It's easier to get an ESC because it's typically done through the factory. And to tell you the truth is, and I'm going to get a bunch of people to throw tomatoes at me for this one, but why are you paying on ESCs? That's almost like, if you can't get an ESC, that's a problem. It comes with the unit.
It's almost like theft, right? We've got so many dealers who are in the 90 plus percentage of theft penetration because it comes with the unit. That's probably where ESC should be.
Yeah, I mean, if you really want to do it out there, man, you should double up on the priority maintenance plans on the pay, and you will watch it grow.
Wow, I was going to say. Two pay plans, one for priority maintenance and one for everything else in that department.
We
want them selling the one thing that your customer gets to use 100% of. Right, we sit here and talk about all the downfalls of if you have to use a gap plan, or if you have to use a theft plan, or if you have to use a warrant, not maintenance, but a maintenance plan. Man, I hope you get to use 100% of this plan, and yet somehow our penetrations, Tony, we used to pride ourselves on a 25-30% penetration in priority maintenance, and now we're sitting here at 9-11% on a national average. And you're just literally only selling it to the people who are going to use absolutely all of it, not retaining the customer. We're not using it for the intent of what we started out with in the earlier days.
True story, man. And I think people will tell you that they, you know, it's better to do the ESC, or we're trying to hit on all categories. I know F&I managers in both F&I, in the marine, and in the power sports space that can hit all those categories and actually kill it at the priority maintenance as well. I think if you were really to step back and ask yourself as an owner or general manager or sales manager listening to this podcast, why you cannot get a better penetration into priority maintenance, I think you know the answer is because you don't make it the priority.
It's just lack of attention. I totally agree with you. You sit here and you think about retention in the space we're in right now. I mean, wouldn't it be great if all of our customers came in all of the time and every time on their way to the service department, they're looking at all the new product that's on the showroom floor with a chance to flip them. There's so many benefits, priority maintenance, and this is not the time to deconstruct it. But I think that during our transactional world of COVID, F&I was just another transaction. Let's get the paperwork done. Let's get them out. We're making great margin. We need to move on from this thing. And priority maintenance is the one retention tool that is an absolute gold mine that I think has been put on the back burner for far too long. So that'll be something I hammer this round.
One last thing to kind of round this thing out is I had an owner tell me in last round of 20 clubs, "Hey dude, you're always talking about this new customer and this new customer that doesn't necessarily like to come into the dealership and how we should cater to texting and videoing these people or sending videos to these people. And what am I doing with this customer that, you know, seriously, they only come in to sign the paperwork, they take it away and this, that, and the third," right?
Yep.
My point was just because they may not want to breach the door as much as a customer did 20 years ago doesn't mean that we can't keep up with them with a video and a text message and still treat them like priority and say, you know, turn a video on yourself. "Sam, what's going on, man? Haven't seen you here in 6 months. Curious to know, you know, if you've been riding or if we need to summarize or winterize that thing and where you've been, where you've been riding to. Let me know if I need to come and pick that thing up and, you know, we'll make it super easy for you. We'll come get it from you. We'll get it all serviced here. I'm also going to send you a few pictures or videos of some new stuff that we have in parts and accessories for you. Hope you're having a good," right? I mean, we can evolve with the customer and still make them priority in a virtual space. They don't always have to come in 5 times a week to the dealership. So it's an evolution.
It's an evolution. It's just a feeling for sure.
Yeah.
Tony, tell us about Every Deal for Every Dollar.
Every Deal for Every Dollar. Listen, gang, there are people that come in and just stand over the unit salivating and say, "This is the one I want. You have the correct color. I'll take it. How much is it?" And they are a full pop deal. And we take them into F&I and they take everything and they buy all kinds of parts and accessories. And then there are people that come in and they offer you half price on the unit. You know, if you could do it at $8,000, I'll take it home today. And typically we see that, and I understand how and why. I get it, is that we have a large portion of sales staff out there that are not trained in the art of negotiation. And the fact of the matter is, if somebody's asking you for half price off a unit, man, smile at them and say, "Holy Moses, where'd you get that price? My manager's in a good mood. Let's go try and put him in a bad mood. Let's sit down and talk about," right? Every deal for every dollar is, I'll take a chicken, a donkey, and a broke down, clapped out 67 Chevy pickup. I'll take that on a trade. Let's see what we can. Yes, you are using every damn tool in your tool belt to make the unit go. Every deal for every dollar.
It goes back to that comment we made last week, Tony, of when I sit there and see how many people are walking deals, they're like, "Well, no, I'm not walking any deals." And I'm like, you're missing my point. Your transactions tell me you're walking the deals that aren't even making it to a sit down. It's not that we sat down and we're writing this thing up and then we're somehow walking the deal. You're probably doing the best deal you can right now with that scenario. You're walking the deal before it ever even gets to a point of a sit down. Because to that point with the clapped out car and the chicken or the whatever you said, like, that deal usually doesn't even make it to the table because the sales guys don't know what to do with that. They're so used to processing transactions. We have to retrain them on every deal for every dollar.
And conversely, managers out there, sales managers, you know, we've trained for years in talking about, "I will take the chicken, the donkey, and the 67 pickup," right? As a sales, sure, let's go talk to the manager, right? Every deal gets sat down. Sales managers, if you have instilled it into your staff that you better not bring me this shit to my desk, well, guess what? You are missing a large portion of people that want to do deals. Now, you have those examples back in the day of people that just want to start at zero. You know, "I'll give you a dollar for that unit and you're going to ask for $20,000. We're going to meet somewhere, but we're just going to start this negotiation." Is, if you're a sales manager that has not trained your staff to bring me every single deal, even if it absolutely makes zero sense to you, you're losing. you're losing a lot of deals, and those people are going to your competition because at least they'll listen.
Well, you're losing, and your scoreboard, which is called your transactional ratios, is proving to us that you're losing those deals. That really rolls into the conversation about sit, right? If you're never seeing it and it never makes it to a sit, there is no write-up and we lose the deal. And you know, in the ever looming quest to get to the benchmark on transactional ratios to deliveries, I think a lot of times when dealers are focused on the deliveries, they forget that if we just got the sits, sometimes the deliveries would take care of themselves. Mm-hmm. And we had Brian from Spitzies in my Harley 13 meeting, Tony. I know you know him very well. And he just made the comment. He's like, if you just focused on 10 to 1 sits, everything else would take care of itself. Now, that's in the Harley space, right? But we know that that 10 to 1 sits would roll out to Metric and Marine and everything, everyone above. If you just focused on sitting down and having a conversation, 10 transactions, you have one person sat down at the desk, invariably the rest of it all takes care of itself. So focus on the sits, not necessarily the deliveries, knowing the deliveries become the result.
Here comes the question, or here comes the statement. I can't tell you how many people say, yeah, okay, well, we sit them at a desk. Yeah, that's an easy step. The sit is not sitting them at a desk. The sit is getting a customer to a desk and showing him the first set of numbers
and how easy it is to say yes to the first set of numbers. You
exactly
bet.
Also, here's the thing, is the reason that we track it that way is you can get, I mean, a skilled salesperson, in my opinion, or a skilled sales manager can get 95% of customers off their feet if they try. 95%. It's easy to get you to come to a pub table, a desk, some sort of kiosk. That's super easy to come and sit down. I can trick you a million ways into following me. But it is a lot harder to get you to come to the desk, Sam, and say, let me collect a little information from you. Let me get your email and your phone number, and I'll be right back. Let me go get some numbers for you. That is a little bit harder. And so, people, the sit down is off their feet into a seat. The first pencil of numbers from the dealership to the customer, that is a sit down. Know the difference.
Know the difference, people. All right, Tony, let's talk about pay plans. You were mentioning on F&I how we could change the F&I pay plan. And I tell you what, on the sales floor, your obsolescent inventory or your inventory about to become obsolete, we got to move that stuff. But as a general rule of thumb, we have some dealers who are going with, hey, man, if I have something ordered, if it is ordered, then there is less commission on that. If I had to go find that boat or that motorcycle for the customer, I'm happy to pay you commission. I'm going to pay you less. If it is in stock, I am going to pay you more commission on that one than me having to go get it. And I would suggest there's a third level in there, which is that if it's obsolete, it's got the most commission on it. So obsolete has the most commission, in stock has more commission on it, and ordered has the least amount of commission. When you start tiering it that way, you have ownership from the sales team as far as moving the product that's on your showroom floor today.
Totally agree with you. Let's talk about sales managers and their teams. You know, I think we have discussed this ad nauseum. COVID was just this thing that was an anomaly, and it was a lot of money being slung around, and it was an opportunity for a sales manager to kind of get lazy. And what I mean by lazy is not that you didn't work your ass off. I mean that you didn't have to do all the ancillary things. And so we are now in a different economy. It's one that you know how to deal with. It's one that you've dealt with before, but we got to make sure that the sales manager is creating enthusiasm every single day. Remember that word spiff that we lost a long time ago, just because we haven't had to do it in a long time, but bring back salesperson incentive funds. You know, I will give somebody $100 cash if you sell this piece of junk right here today. You got to do things to give them a reason to come in and laugh and smile, games, all that kind of stuff. Who can make the most audacious offer today via text message? Who can make the funniest video today? Whatever it is, it's time for the sales manager to create some enthusiasm and excitement. It is beyond difficult. Yeah, Sam, I've heard you talk, you know, in speeches and in videos about, you know, professionalism. One of the hardest things, the hardest thing to do as a professional fireman was the repetition, was to continue to go to the same call over and over every single day, sometimes four times a day. Mm-hmm. Going to see the same patient four times in one shift really tried your patience and knowing patients on a first name basis, like, oh, here we go. We're going to see Alice today. There's her address, right? That's really, really hard. It's also really hard to come into a power sports dealership on a Tuesday morning after you had 2 days off and hear your sales manager say, get out there, make your calls, clean the bikes. Let's create some. That just sucks every single day.
Yeah.
Give them a reason. Pizza parties. I'll buy you your favorite gift card to a movie theater or whatever. You got to create enthusiasm.
It's the mind numbing redundancy of it all, right? I mean, when you're hitting it off with a customer and you're in that moment and you're in the zone, like having the time of your lives and that guy goes home with something, it's just like, that was so easy. Well, how do you do that every single time? And quite frankly, as managers, how do you provide that environment every single time? And the whole point to that is we got to get back to some of the basics. We as a sales manager with the scorecards and the excitement level, we've got to get back to some of the basics to create that environment for our team so that our team can then create that environment for the customers coming in the door. And my last bullet point in this department, Tony, has it comes from our buddy Bob Papa John.
Roberto Papa Juan.
Roberto is indeed right from right up there in the Canadian side of life. But his point was he's teaching his sales guys that, you know, not only creating that great experience with them, but in the middle of doing that or in the follow-up saying, hey, how am I doing? Hey, Tony, how did I do today? Did we get you on the right thing? Did I get you what you needed? Literally asking for feedback on how am I doing? And we just all sat around the room thinking that's such a blinding flash of the obvious and such good feedback to get. Because if you know you're going to be asking that question, you better be given a show that's worthy of an answer of, dude, you're killing it. I'm having a great time. Thanks, you got me all this information, right? So yep. I think in the fundamentals of getting back to the basics, there are some wrinkles that we can always add to the mix. And this being one of them, how am I doing? Ask to your customers.
Roberto Papa Juan, another Jedi, businessman Jedi right there.
Musician, all of the above. Guy's super talented.
Yeah, he is super talented. Let's go to the pro shop, P&A service. So this is my state of the industry video, which is, it's going to hit every damn one in 2024 is going to be culture. What is the culture of your dealership tour, your poker run, your ticket to ride, whatever it is called in your dealership? What's the culture behind that system? And if you're sitting there scratching his head going, what the hell is that? Well, then there's a problem right there. And this is what's going on when somebody is fully on the ether. They just purchased a new or pre-owned something new to them, whatever that is. You got to remember, it's one of the best days of their life. What are we doing to ensure that that customer has a great experience going into your pro shop, going into your service department, going into Motor Clothes before they go into F&I? And this isn't a training session today. We're not going to be sitting here for 10 minutes explaining what this is, but that customer has already proven that they're willing to spend money. Are you good enough to show them all the things that they could be putting on their body or their unit before they leave, right? One of the things that we're noticing is the attachment rate for our stuff, meaning the stuff that we're putting on boats from our pro shop, the stuff that we're putting on our units from our parts and accessories department, that number is declining, which tells me that we are not doing a better job of getting those people in to meet our managers in the pro shop, parts department, service department, Motor Clothes, and getting them to continue their purchase cycle while they have that unit on go, right? So attachment rate is something that I really want you guys to watch. There is no better time than right now to ensure that an exceptional dealership tour is occurring. Because again, remember, COVID brought so many great things, but it also killed a lot of the fun things that we did. The ringing of the bell, the taking them into all of our departments, introducing them to our staff, getting super excited for them. Spring has sprung, man. Make sure you're doing a really good dealership tour.
Well, Tony, that takes me back to something 15 years ago. Most of this information I'm about to say, well, I think this particular statistic came straight from the MIC, but it was that the first purchase, the first major unit purchase, was 8% of what that customer will spend over the course of his or her lifetime, assuming that they get enrolled in that sport or activity. 8%. Think of that new boat, think of that new motorcycle, and then think of all the ancillary sales that haven't happened yet, and it has to do with exactly what Tony's talking about, the attachment rate.
How much of that number do you think you specifically, just you, actually make happen in the national average.
You think I'd moving
at least 1 to 2% of that number?
How dare you, sir? Let's see. Just trying to support my industry.
I bought this adventure bike that I'll have, and I'm going to go buy all the adventure equipment. Yeah, I think you probably jack that number up yourself. I think what they should be doing is thanking you.
I'm trying to fuel the industry that fuels me, Tony.
Yes, man.
You should participate every now and again. You should jump in there.
17 jackets at a time.
I love it. Well, I don't want dealers to have to write shit off, and that leads me to, you know, when I was talking about Doug Rudd or Rick Alcon sitting around, you know, dropping pearls of wisdom, there was a moment where Doug and Rick were conversing amongst themselves in that very same meeting. And I was just like, guys, what's up? And Rick speaking for the two of them, he said, you guys and all your talk about write-offs in this room, and this is bullshit. And they were specifically talking about all the obsolete inventory in P&A at the time of the conversation. And well, we just wrote it down to zero, and then that's how we cleaned up our margins, and we're just starting over again. And he's like, who do you think took the hit on the discount? And there was dead silence in the room. And it's invariably somebody said, well, the owners did. Well, yeah, exactly. And Rick's point was, and he mentioned 5 bullet points before you go to write something off. And yeah. I just love that. He said, hang on, because first there's the purchase. Did you have the right person? Did they buy the right stuff? Are you using an open to buy? Like, that whole thing needs to happen first. And then how we merchandise it on the showroom floor is critical. Do we have the waterfalls? Do we have the mannequins? Are the jackets on the mannequins? All that kind of stuff. We then get to retail it. And then if we need to, we can strategically discount it throughout the year. And then before the next order, then we write this stuff off. The write-off is the last thing to happen. And I think the temperature in the room, or certainly their feeling about the temperature in the room, was it's the first thing that's happening, you know, because if a manager is not part of the accountability of that hit, of that loss, he or she, it's just easy to go, well, let's just write that off and let's get the inventory in here that we need. It's like, well, those are real dollars that we're writing off now. So let's be careful of that. So I'm Jedi trying to help shit. The industry Jedi with the write-off.
Shit, yeah, it's Jedi shit. Moving rocks with your mind. It's funny. It's one of the first times I think I ever heard. It may have been the first time I ever heard is hitting the parts and accessory manager's pay based off of writing things off was Doug Rudd. Said if you're going to order incorrectly and you're not going to do all those things, the amount of money that we lose by writing stuff off comes off of the pay plan.
Yeah, well, I remember now he may have told Ride Now this, or Ride Now maybe told Doug. I don't remember how that went back and forth, but I do remember that Ride Now had a philosophy that anything that hit obsolescence, the retail dollars of that obsolete thing came off of the manager's pay. Now think about that, Tony, a $400 retail jacket. That's $400 out of that parts manager's pay that month. Guess what never happens in that scenario?
I wonder if they're still doing that. Cam Tack. What do you think Cam Tack's doing right now? Cam, you out there?
Sitting on a beach, feet up in the air, wondering if Mark's going to, you know, get it all dialed in for him.
That's crap,
He's Cam. Got a little kid, man. You got to give him some time.
Give us a call, Cam. Give us a call. All right. Let's talk about, where's our last bullet point? We're not fixing units, but providing a white glove experience. I love that.
Yeah, that came out of one of Neil's groups. He had it on his bullet points for follow up on the groups. But it really goes back to the idea that in the service department, so many people think service is about fixing the vehicle. And it's not. It's about providing a white glove experience while you fix the vehicle. I assume you're going to fix the boat that I bring into you. Me getting an unbelievable experience while you're fixing the boat, that's a whole different level. And that keeps me coming back all the time. So it's just a reminder that as more boats are coming in, as more motorcycles are coming in, because we sold so many of them and they're coming back for service now, are we giving them that white glove experience? And just think about that. Like, what experience would you want to have? I would think you'd want to be laughing, having a great time while confidently knowing it's getting done by professionals in the industry. Is that what's happening? Or are you just fixing the boat?
Like that. Again, that's something that we endeavor here at GC to teach all service advisors, all service managers, is it's not good enough anymore to just bring your stuff in and we'll call you when it's done. White glove experience is paramount these days, and it exists out there. You just have to go into the best power sports marine dealerships out there, or you have to go into high-end luxury auto and you will understand what that is. Or, man, you just have to go to basic auto.
You can go to bicycle shops and get this. You could probably go to ski and snowboard shops and get this. So many places can fix my bicycle. But the one that treats me like Norm at Cheers is the one that I keep going back to over and over again.
Yeah. Let's talk about staffing.
It's funny. We were having a roundtable with, you know, the attitude of the staff and hiring on the attitude. And our boy David Hicks. He said, management attitude goes as far as employee attitude plus your performance. And I was like, that is a great formula. Management attitude goes as far as employee attitude plus performance. So your attitude, Mr. Employee, plus your performance dictates my attitude towards you. It always starts off great, but it starts to decline as your attitude and or your performance start to decline.
I like it. You know what, dude? I don't want to go any further. I totally spaced this one. It should have been up with P&A Pro Shop and Service. So let me make sure I back up and get this one, which is unit sales through service. 3% still the benchmark. Now, before I even get to benchmark, I'd love to hear from you. info@garagecomposites.com. Hit us up and let us know. Like, do you have a good system in service to ensure that we're, again, here we talk about, you know, the stamp approved for sale. Are we calling our salespeople to come and look at the units that we're going to put up onto a bench? If we see that the amount of work that we're going to do on a unit is X amount, that, man, that's a pretty big amount of money. I wonder if we could get them into a new unit at a lower payment. Do we have salespeople that are smart enough to look at the service scheduler for the day and decide that they're going to kind of creep into that department throughout the day and see if they can't talk to the owner? You know, the fact is that if you have a good system, hit me up, info@garagecomposites.com. But again, owners of dealerships, general managers, you are talking about a treasure trove of information on that service scheduler. And I would bet you that less than 10% of the industry are actually going and taking a look at the boat when it comes in on the back of the truck. I just think we're doing a terrible job.
When I think, and to clarify what Tony's talking about, he's talking about taking that boat in on trade to sell them a new one that's on the showroom floor all through the service department. So 3% was the number he fired off. Out of 100 repair orders, 3% of them we can convert into buying a new boat, right? That's the simple math on that. And I think it's compounded, Tony, because people are sitting there going, the last thing I need is more inventory, Tony. I don't want to take on more inventory. And it's like, well, wait a minute. I'm not suggesting you just outright buy the used boat, although maybe advantageous to your used boat inventory situation. I'm suggesting this is a way to get one of the new boats that you're paying juice on out the door and take in a clean used trade by doing so. So to Tony's point, I think it's just not a focus for a lot of dealers for a variety of reasons, that being one of them. But we know that we can move, for every 100 ROs, we can move 3 boats out the door if we're focused on that.
Talk to me about succession planning.
Yeah, it was a big one, particularly in our marine businesses. That, you know, you and I talked, Tony, I forget where we first heard this, but the second you start a business, the next thing should be you look into how you're going to get out of that business. What is your succession plan for getting out of it? And that conversation came up with a lot of our marine dealers. Like, here we are in a new chapter, right? COVID, we were forced into, and everybody just stumbled into that chapter. It turned out to go very well. And now all of a sudden margins are coming down. It's a lot more work to do this. And you got a lot of dealers who've been at this for a while who are looking to get out. But what is the plan to get out? And what we're finding is that most people do not have a succession plan to get out. If that's you, to Tony's point, hit me up. Hit us up, info@garagecomposites.com. We'd like to know that. Maybe we'll have some experts on for succession planning that do just that on the podcast. But we know that there's a lot of conversation going around in the 20 clubs about putting that plan together. And, you know, this recap isn't the forum because there are a million ways to cut this, whether it's stock ownership, actual phantom stock, whatever it happens to be. But you definitely need to be putting yourself in a position to get out of the business, even if you're thinking now's not the time for it. Let's start putting some structure in mind to make that happen.
Last one on staffing is staff reductions based off of transactions, not based off of floor feeling. You know, this came out of Schooley's 20 Club, one of his 20 clubs. And it's a really good concept, which is your gut could be telling you it feels like it's dead in here. There's not enough customers in here. What is your transactional data? What is your door swing counter? What is your traffic log, your digital traffic log say? Based off of metrics, and especially off of your transactions versus just your gut feel, is how you should be ramping up or ramping down staffing.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good way to finish that one off. I got a couple of random ones here, Tony. I'm going to start with YouTube channels, and we have a couple of our dealers that are, they have their own YouTube channels, and I don't think that's unique, but what they do is they have their most common vehicles and they're doing full walk around vehicle, full walk arounds on these most common vehicles. And then in the notes of the video, they're putting some frequently asked questions in there. So your 10 most common vehicles that you're going to sell, or depending on the size of your dealership, you may need to go 20 or how many brands you have, whatever. A full walk around, a really good, well done walk around of that. So you can start to refer people to your YouTube channel. It's not hard to do. You're just going to get your sales guys on board with making the videos and then have somebody create the YouTube channel and put those on there. You'll be surprised how many people will jump on that because they're searching for it.
I'd like to see what your YouTube algorithm has involved in your feed. Fairy dust and dudes in tights, circus freaks and Chinese food.
Well, you go for the one percenters, Tony. You forget the big things. Apparently, that's all I am: circus tights and Chinese food.
Oh man! All right, let's go to for dealer use only. And I like this because, and good Lord, I think we could do this. We could do better at this for the company here as well. Which is, I see a lot of stuff pushed to me on social media for things like training manuals, for things like in onboarding, intaking of new people, in reviews that are automated online. But you know, the concept of for dealer use only, keeping a bank of videos for just internal use, for whether it's training or HR or whatever that might be, it's another really good example of something that you could be doing as a dealer to kind of cut the curve. Because you know, that or onboarding process, no matter what, is like the telephone game. It tends to drift away from your intended message every time you bring somebody on, or it might be different. But if you completely put it into a video form, you have something that you can go back to every single time. Hey, Dantzler, tell me about for dealer use only videos that you have. I believe it was Rich Regal that was talking about that, right?
We've got some dealers who, by accident, and now on purpose, by accident, this again was Rich Regal from C-Ray. He said they had some videos that they created that were for dealer use only. And some of those got out into the hands of the consumers, and the consumers ate it up. And so what did they do? Now all the videos that are created inside the store, the dealers are putting for dealer use only. And so when Tony's interested in the boat, I'm going to say, hey, I'm going to send you a video. I'm not really supposed to, so just heads up on that. But it's some really good insight as to this particular boat, or this particular program, or whatever it is. So they're staging it as for dealer use only, but it makes it very enticing because I'm getting to see behind the scenes at the dealership as a consumer. And so we're pushing those videos out, and they're getting far more watches than some of the other videos on the sites.
All right. And we're going to end our second of our two-part series on spring training 2024 with the big guy, Dave Bofill. Hit us. Dude,
gotta love Dave. That podcast we had with him was fantastic. We got so much feedback on that one.
He thinks he's so tough, and he's just such a softy.
Dave used to spend a lot of money on gifts, right? You buy a new Chris Craft from Dave. He's got some cushions. He's got some towels. He's got some wine glasses for you. He's got a cooler for you. He's got all this gift package that you would get when you buy a boat, but you wouldn't get it the day you bought the boat. And that was the important part. This came up in one of our Harley meetings because the conversation was on the ticket to ride, or for those of you who don't know that vernacular, when somebody buys a new motorcycle, they go meet people in the parts department, the motor clothes department, the service department, et cetera. We want to maximize that sale by letting them buy a bunch of stuff. And they're like, are giveaways still working? Do we give something away? And if so, does it help and whatever? And there was some general malaise about all of that. But I brought up this Dave Bofill thing, and it seemed to strike a chord because Dave would require them to come back in. And it wasn't a requirement as much as it was an invitation to meet the big guy. Now, Dave tries to be involved in most all of the sales that happen in his dealership. But imagine in your store, you have X amount of salespeople, and they say, hey, we got a special gift for you. Come back in. The owner's going to be here on Tuesday. He personally wants to present you this particular gift. It doesn't matter what the gift is. It matters that they get an invitation to come back and meet the big guy or gal, which would be the owner inside of the store. So it's just a nice thing that the owner can do to meet all of the people who bought from that person and get them a gift and make it important as opposed to the day of.
Right on. Well, gang, that has been, that's a wrap for our two-part series on spring training 2024. I hope you guys are having a really great start or a continuance into April. We will talk to you guys soon. For Sam Dantzler, I'm Tony Gonzalez. This has been GarageCast. Hope you have a fantastic Tuesday.
Thanks, everyone.